It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
While the U.S. and social media companies have banned Russian state media and propaganda in light of the war in Ukraine, China is quietly spreading its own disinformation through search engines, which is an interesting challenge that I don't think very many of us are actually thinking about. We're still working to get our next guest on the line, and we're going to speak to Ellen Gekyan, who is the junior fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy, and has a great piece about winning the web, how Beijing exploits search results to shape views of China, especially as it relates to things around COVID-19. Really interesting as we think through this, as the war in Ukraine unfolds, Russian propaganda about the conflict has gotten a boost from a very interesting source: government officials and state media out of Beijing. Here in multiple languages and in regions around the world, China is routinely amplifying Russia's conspiracy theories, rationalizing why President Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine and undermining the credibility and the appeal of the United States, of NATO, of independent media. And all of this, of course, we saw play out over and over over the course of the last week, even in Davos, Switzerland, at the Economic Forum. China declined not only to applaud when Ukrainian President Zelensky spoke to the group, which led to a standing ovation by everyone else in the room, with the exception of China. So that's an interesting thing. And so even as China declines to endorse the Kremlin's activities and invasion of Ukraine, this spring, for example, China's messengers promoted the baseless Russian claim that it was the United States was supporting a biological weapons program in Ukraine. And in there were moments within that whole battle and that whole thing that you actually had more coming out of China than you did from Russia itself. We have Ellen now. Awesome. Wonderful. Ellen Gekyan is a junior fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy. Ellen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. And we always my tombstone is going to read, "You're only as good as your Wi-Fi," and technology is always my nemesis, but we are so glad you're on. So give us some of your insight. You've been tracking this really closely, and I think most people were just thinking, especially as it relates to Ukraine, that it was just kind of Russian propaganda that we had to be worried about. But you've dug into this, and China's playing a significant piece of the game.
Yes, absolutely. Especially now that the major search engine companies, as well as social media companies, have taken steps to really de-amplify, de-rank, and demonetize Russian state content. In terms of the world of authoritarian governments, Beijing's media machine is the one that we need to watch.
Wow. Give us some examples of some of the things that you're seeing as China ramps that up. You mentioned they are getting some tighter controls on what Russia is doing. How is China going around that?
Yeah. So, you know, the research that we did specifically looks into the question of search engines. You know, I think for the past few years, for close to a decade, especially as the United States has grappled with the idea of propaganda and disinformation coming from foreign sources, social media, as you can tell, has been where most of our focus has been, and with good reason. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube have been major sources. We looked instead at the sort of more active information consumption side of this, which is, what if you heard about something and went to Google it, or to use Bing search for it, or to use Google News for it? And what would you find if you looked at topics that are strategically important to Beijing. In our case specifically, we looked at Xinjiang and COVID-19 because these are topics that are incredibly geopolitically salient to Beijing and around which Chinese state media produce a lot of content. So we chose a group of search terms going from the neutral to the more loaded. And we said, okay, so for 120 days, let's monitor what comes up if you look for information using one of our major search engines. And we found actually some startling things. We were not surprised to find that more loaded and conspiratorial terms would surface a lot of state media content. But perhaps our most shocking finding was that if you just Google the term Xinjiang, which of course refers to the northwest region of China that's home to the Uyghur population and to egregious human rights abuses, a lot of state media comes up in both new searches on Google and Bing, as well as on YouTube. So we were quite surprised to see that the most neutral, the most innocuous of search terms would lead you to conspiratorial and propaganda content.
Wow, that is stunning. And so as you dig into that, this is one of the things I love about what you all do, and that is that you're never content to just point out the problem. You also come up with a host of options and things we ought to be thinking about or implementing. So what should be done to address some of the findings, and what should companies be thinking about and acting on?
Yeah, excellent question. And I'll start off by saying that there's a real distribution of responsibility. You know, the tech companies are incredibly actively thinking about this all the time. And I think doing a lot of great work to basically balance how they, you know, prevent people from using search engines to consume information in ways that can harm them, but also to give them a diverse range of content. So this is a real balancing act for the companies that run search engines. We recommend a few things, and I'll highlight the top lines, which are labeling and context, we think really work. So Google, for example, has recently started testing an about this result feature in search to anyone who wants to go and Google their own, any of these terms that we've mentioned. Pay attention to the three dots that are on the right side of all of the results. That'll give you a little bit of information about the domain that's providing you information. So we think that this should not just be formalized, but also expanded. So clear labels for when you're getting information from state domains, for example. There's also something that I think is hugely important is clarity, transparency, and education about ranking decisions. One of the reasons why we think this research is really important is that, you know, most people, when they go to do their own research on any of these search engines, they think that the search engine is a neutral conduit of information. And they think that, you know, what they see on the first page, and most of us will only look at the first page, is objectively delivered. And that's simply not the case. So we think that search engines have a responsibility to be clearer and to educate more about what goes into rank, what goes into giving you that first search result that you're likely to click on. And then on the user side, of course, I think we also have a responsibility to be better about our consumption choices, because every click that we make on that page of search results, then also, you know, it's a dynamic relationship that we have. Our behavior also shapes in the end what results we get.
This is so, so good. We're going to post all of this and have a deeper dive on this one, because this is so critical. And then just real quickly, I do want you to weigh in on something else that you've raised, and that is the responsibility of content creators, especially those that cover issues that might be important to a place, either whether that's Russia or Beijing or somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the third leg of, we think, the distributed responsibility. So content creators, that includes independent journalists, that includes academia and think tanks, as well as government officials. Anyone who's producing content about these topics really should be thinking about how people are searching for their content. You know, at the end of the day, a lot of this is decided by SEO, which is something that anyone who has a website, you know, can use to make sure their content is discovered. So thinking about how audiences are conceptualizing and searching for the information you provide can really help get great reporting ahead of propaganda.
Fantastic. Ellen, we appreciate you joining us today. This is really crucial information, and we're going to have you back on the program to do a deeper dive, because I think this is so vital. It impacts us. And as you said, there's this symbiotic relation of what we click on and what we validate And so we are part of both the problem and the solution, as well as those platforms and all the pieces in between. So, Ellen, thanks so much for joining us on Inside Sources today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Again, that's Ellen Agekyan, Junior Fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy. That is some great, great stuff. That's got me and my mind spinning in terms of some things we got to look at. Both from a federal level, government level, and personal level, content creator level, platform level. Lots to discuss to make sure we're getting to the truth, because that's actually what matters. Coming up, Jake Hunsaker, running for Congress, going to join us. Don't miss it. Stay with us.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.